Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution of the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Welcome to the Capital Connection. I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us today is New York State Senator Andrea Stewart Cousins, a Yonkers Democrat who is the new leader of the Democratic Conference. Leader Stewart Cousins, who has served in the Senate since 2007, is the first woman to head a legislative conference in Albany. Leader Andrea Stewart Cousins, welcome to the Capital Connection.
How nice to be here, and thank you so much for having me, and I want to wish you and your listeners a very, very happy new year.
Well, indeed, and the same to you. I mean, there's so many things we could talk about, but maybe you could sort of set the stage for us as we're going into a most interesting session of the State Senate where all kinds of combinations and permutations are in evidence. So maybe you could sort of tell us where we're at and how we got there.
Well, you know, I think the way you set the stage is probably the best way to really set it. You know, when I first got to the Capitol as a senator in 2007, I remember one of your colleagues, Jay Gallagher, who's since deceased, was looking as we were watching all of the opening kind of ceremonies. And one of the things he said to me is like, oh, this is Albany. You know, nothing ever changes, because at that time, Governor Eliot Spitzer was saying on day one, everything changes. And he's like, I don't know, maybe I'm just a cynical newspaper person. And I said, no, don't worry, everything will change. Well, everything has changed, and since I arrived in 2007, there's been three governors. I mean, we've changed lieutenant governors, we've changed controllers, we've changed attorneys, we've changed everything. We've changed majorities, we've changed majority leaders, and as you said, I'm the very first woman to ever lead a conference in the history of the state legislature, which is rather amazing. But the reality is that the only way that any of us can rightfully set the stage is that this is a set that is changing constantly. And so what all of us have to do is make sure that we are part of a positive change that benefits New York State residents. And that's what I came to do. So that's the best I can tell you. I am at I'm at this leadership position at a critical juncture. As you know, there is a coalition between majority Republicans and five members of the Independent Democratic Caucus who left our conference, the Independent Democratic Conference, who left our conference 2 years ago and have been kind of operating on their own, and they have formed a coalition with the Republicans. We have, as you know, the numerical majority as Democrats, but because this coalition has been formed with Republicans, it has disallowed us from having the role of the majority in the chamber at this point.
So let me see if I understand this, Leader. There are now more Democrats than Republicans.
Right.
But because these five Democrats moved over to make a separate deal, the Republicans who lost the election are still going to stay in power.
That's right. They are now empowered. Exactly.
How does a person who ran on a Democratic Party nomination then announce to his constituents or her constituents that he is going to now vote with the Republicans who he ran against?
Well, Alan, as you know, many people don't make those announcements.
No, you never do.
But I think, and I've said it before, that I do, when we talk about all the things that we spoke about, certainly during this last election with impediments to the vote and voter suppression and so on, I think that this is kind of the last thing that one can do to voters who frankly actually went out and voted for you, whatever line you're on. I don't think it would be a mistake for them to believe that they actually were going to conference with the people upon whose line they ran and won. And so in many ways, this is kind of a voter disenfranchisement as far as I can see. But nonetheless, I have always had a good relationship with all of the members of the IDC. I've had, you know, lengthy conversation with its leader, Senator Klein. And what we are about is trying to, again, get the people's business front and center on the agenda, whether it's building the economy and jobs and doing our progressive agenda items that that also include, obviously, doing some sensible gun laws and doing something about the stop and frisk and making sure that women's reproductive health. So there's just a lengthy agenda that is a progressive agenda that, from what it seems, the IDC is in agreement for the most part with the Democrats. So we are going forward. We don't know what the rules of engagement will be as yet. From what I understand, there'll be Senator Klein will have 2 weeks and Senator Skelos will have 2 weeks. So we don't know. But I think that we are all best served if we make sure that the people who sent us here to serve are at the top of our agenda.
Well, I looked into my crystal ball, Senator, and asked it whether or not 2 weeks on for the Republicans, 2 weeks on for the errant Democrats would work, and the crystal ball yelled back at me, hell no. So do you...
Very vocal crystal ball.
Oh, absolutely. It has speakers on either side. And so, you know, New Year's is a time when one makes predictions. What would your prediction be?
Well, I predict that the Democratic conference will be a conference that
that's yours, the regular
that's
Democrats.
That's our conference, yes. Will be a strong, committed conference to making sure that we are at the forefront of advancing, again, the agenda that the people have sent us to advance. And in so doing, we will do our part. We will partner with the governor. We will partner with our partners in the legislature. And that's what I can predict. That's what I can predict. And because, as I said and as we both agreed, there is nothing but transition and change that is going on all about us, all not just in the legislature, all around us. So the best thing we can do is arm ourselves for that change, be prepared for that change, put ourselves in the best position for that change. And I would like to predict that we will not only be a statistical majority, but we will become a functional majority. In other words, we will be able to lead the policy agenda as Democrats in the chamber.
And do you think the other guys will come back and sit with Democrats in
again,
one conference?
I don't have the kind of crystal ball that you have. That is just kind of very explicit and short.
I'll lend you mine if you like.
Well, if it gives me the right answers, I'll take it. But I don't know how that happens, but I do believe it does, that we will be a functional majority. And again, it will certainly, if we are not, it will certainly not be because we are or anything less than great and willing partners on behalf of New York State.
Okay, so I've talked to people in your conference, Liz Krueger and Mike Giannaris and so many others, and this is the question I have. The governor has come up with 10 things he wants done, many of which are really admirable. There is a feeling among some, and I can't quote directly because, frankly, I don't remember, that the, quote, new Democrats, combining with the Republicans, would meet the governor's agenda, but they would do so not in the way in which a good Democrat might vote. So you might have a minimum wage increase, but it wouldn't be enough. Or you might have a campaign finance law without money so that it looks good, but it doesn't smell good.
Well,
what do you do then?
What we do is we take everything case by case. I know that we, the Democrats in my conference want to see real legislation passed that will be meaningful in the lives of the people whose lives we are trying to touch.
Well, what happens if they come up with a question?
I understand what you're saying. Yeah. I mean, nobody has an appetite in the Democratic Conference for watered-down bills. Nobody does. I mean, again, we understand compromise. Clearly, this whole fiscal cliff situation that happened recently, you know, at some point, people had to vote in ways that they may not have ordinarily voted. But I think that we have been very clear. We have been fighting for a real increase in minimum wage. We have been fighting for real campaign finance reform with the public with public financing. We have really put the principles and the policies very clearly in the front of the constituencies, and frankly, have had great support for the kinds of things that we have been advocating for. So it is very difficult without seeing legislation to say what we will or will not accept, but I think it is pretty clear that people have worked a very, very long time to see an agenda that, again, is a real progressive agenda, not something that we can, you know, pretend is going to really be of the type of impact that we would hope when we pass laws such as campaign finance, such as a minimum wage. So we're going to be very, very clear. They said nobody's going to be an obstructionist. Nobody's trying to stop things that are good for people. And again, I think everybody understands when you have to fight, when you have to listen, when you have to compromise. But we're, you know, I think that, and I hope, even in terms of what the governor's agenda is, you know, going to be, I hope that, you know, we will actually, you know, really come up with things that not only are the letter of the law, but the spirit of the laws that we are trying to pass. Well, and again, we're certainly willing partners for that.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a whole bunch of questions, almost as if I were giving you a Rorschach
test.
Okay,
so I have to,
and then you have to
faster.
Just give me not faster, but you know, just give me the meat of it, and then we'll know where you're standing. First of all, hydrofracking.
Oh yeah, I've been on that moratorium. I'm very concerned about hydrofracking. I've gone to all of these hearings, and the thing that really bothers me most is that the industry never shows up. And
interesting.
For all of their trying to convince us that they are really doing the right thing, I've seen, I'm sure, millions of dollars worth of commercials when they were running all these commercials saying how well they're all doing this work. It just baffled me why they were never willing to actually show up. So I, along with several of my colleagues, are very concerned about hydrofracking and certainly the health implications and making sure that we know what they are before we commit New York to doing it.
Guns.
Sensible gun laws, got to do it. There's no reason why people are able to buy unlimited assault weapons and ammunition, and why if I've got to renew my driver's license every X number of years, I don't have to renew my gun licenses. It's inconceivable to me that we can't do appropriate background checks. It's inconceivable that we can't do sensible things that, again, we understand, you know, there's no panacea here, but we could certainly limit the access and the damage that people can do when they put their hands on some of these weapons. We have to do something. We have to do it soon.
Mandate relief.
Got to have it. As you know, I am in Westchester County, and the local governments here, school districts, are all clamoring for mandate relief. And of course, we were able to codify the principle of the mandate because I was on the mandate relief task force. I've been chair and ranker of local government for as long as I've been there up until this point.
Senator Ranker, for our listeners, is the top Democrat in the Republican-controlled House.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
And have passed legislation that has made it easier for municipalities to do business with each other, with school districts, and so on and so forth. So we have to continue our commitment to finding ways to reduce the mandates on our municipalities and on our school district. And I'm very anxious to see how the Mandate Relief Council which has been put in place in order to review proposed mandates, review existing mandates, and to allow for an appeal process or a mitigating process for these school districts and municipalities who can come to them and say, look, I know what you want me to do, but I can do it by this means and save X number of dollars. Is that going to be all right? So, you know, I'm interested in seeing how the mechanism that's in place works, because I think if it works properly, it can begin to really relieve a lot of the mandates that are on these various school districts and municipalities appropriately.
Is there one obnoxious one you can look at right now and say to us, you know, this one ought not to be there? One mandate.
There is a list of federal mandates. So it's not, no, Alan, I wish I could say it was one, because these things swim in my head. I have so many different mandate relief proposals that come to me. And, you know, each district is different, and that's what I found out. I mean, I have a Big Five school district, which is Yonkers.
Yep.
And then I've got, you know, little tiny districts, Elmsford. What is a gnat to Yonkers,
you
know, is an elephant maybe to Elmsford.
Sure.
So it just really isn't all that simple in terms of those things that can be easily remedied or even easily considered. But I know that many of my school districts have said, look, there are federal guidelines for about 100 things. And in many of these things, the state goes above and beyond. Would it be so hard to review which of these things we could actually live with what the federal government says is okay, thereby decreasing the cost or decreasing the implications? So, I mean, like I said, we've got a lot of framework that has already been brought out over the years when we're talking about it. So it's just a matter of really, and that's why I'm glad this the governor had codified this particular council, because there is a mechanism by which these things can be brought to the council, and sometimes legislatively mitigated, sometimes just by rules changes. I mean, there's opportunity, and I really, really know that the school districts and the municipalities are looking to us to make good on that promise. And I'm a firm advocate for making sure that happens.
Charter schools.
I've always been somebody who, first of all, I'm a product of public education. I know how important access to quality education is for everyone. So I have always been a huge advocate. In fact, one of the reasons that I got into state government at all is because on the county level, where I was, as you know, for 10 years,
sure,
we could not impact school policy. So I wanted so much to be able to make sure that our schools are funded properly, and that we are able to reach children wherever they are and make sure that they're competitive as we move into this next, to this global economy. And with the type of recession that we've had and the other types of economic woes, unfortunately, the funding of education has been difficult in the ways that it had happened before, and the assessment of what we need and how we need to do it is ongoing. That being said, I would like to see, a separate funding stream for charter schools, frankly, because I don't know that we've gotten it right in terms of funding our education system as it is. And I understand options, and I understand we want to make sure that, again, we're fulfilling the needs of our students. But I think as long as it's this stream is going to this and that stream is going to this, it becomes extremely competitive. And the children, you know, will ultimately lose if we can't get this education.
Let me see if I get this right. Right now, the charter school money comes out of the existing money. Yeah, and you don't want that to happen.
No.
And you think there ought to be a separate sort of line for
right,
that?
Right, exactly.
And I agree with you. Okay, so let's talk.
So are we agreeing on most everything?
So far,
okay,
so good.
We're good.
You're very articulate, and you're very nice. I saw somebody in the paper the other day, some reporter who I don't always agree with, saying you were going to be just a figurehead in your conference. Is that right?
Does that make any sense? That makes no sense.
No.
That makes no sense. You know, when somebody pointed it out to me, I said it's really amusing, because obviously you know, it, first of all, how do I say this? I didn't get here by accident.
No.
I'm in the Senate. I, you know, took on a 28-year incumbent to get here. In addition to which, when I lost the first time by 18 votes, I actually ran again. Many people would not have done that and won. I have been underestimated my entire political life for whatever the reason. But that's okay because I work hard. I understand exactly what I've come to do, which is to represent the people who sent me. And I'm very, very clear. It's not, you know, I don't know what I saw that politically unsophisticated. I don't know what that means. I can tell you that there's no, obviously, I can't be that politically unsophisticated because
here
I am.
Yeah.
And I've been, you know, in elected office for quite a few years. I said 10 years on the county legislature, took on an incumbent for that seat as well. As well as being in the Senate and now the leader. So I don't know how unsophisticated that is. But I am a principled person, and I will say that it's not, you know, nobody knows. I mean, there's no price for me. You know, I try to do the right thing with integrity, with ethics, with clarity, and with conviction. And that's how I create my policy positions. And that's how I will be leader, and I believe that's how most of us want to govern. So I think that like everything else, we will see how this works out. But politically unsophisticated somehow doesn't fit any of my life in politics.
No, I'm with you on that too. What about the Amador Kacik race? The Democrat loses by 39 votes, and that's the 37 votes, and that's determined by a Republican judge. I hate to say it that way, but he was a Republican, and he decides to do that. It's going to be appealed. Do you expect her, the Democrat, to win?
I would certainly expect that she wins. I would love to see those the poll workers' ballots counted. I had, again, the same thing. If you recall, and I bet you do, when I lost in February by 18 votes when I first ran in 2004, it was resolved in 2005. It was after a series of appeals. And part of those appeals were the absentee ballots of poll workers who in our district had been told for years that because many of those poll workers were unable for a variety of reasons to get to their home polling place, they were able to vote by absentee. When it came to the actual count, and it was got down to paper ballots, they wanted to exclude those poll workers because they indeed weren't absent. They were there, and they should have gone there, and so on and so forth. So at the end of a very, very long appeal process, which did include the appellate court, those ballots were counted.
So there's a history here.
Yeah, there's a history here. And you know what? Even if the history, this one they're saying is a date issue, that they, you know, these things were filed too soon. I mean, the only thing I can say is I don't know who's more committed to an accessible electoral process than those people who probably get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to get somewhere at 5 o'clock in the morning to open a poll at 6 o'clock in the morning that stays there till the last person gets there an opportunity to vote into the 9, 10 o'clock at night. Who does that
now,
if they're not committed to voting?
Now, Senator, I wish I could find something I don't agree with you about, but how important is her winning in terms of what's going on in the Senate? And you only have less than a minute to tell me.
It's important because it allows the people who voted to have their votes counted.
Well, this has really been fun. Our guest has been New York State Senator Andrea Stewart Cousins, a Yonkers Democrat who is the new leader of the Democratic Conference. Senator, thank you so much for being with us.
I appreciate your allowing me to spend this time with you.
Well, we look forward to many more such conversations.
Excellent.
Thanks again.
Thank you, Al.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. Ian Pickus is producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign. Online at nyscasa.org.